Welcome to today's reading of Newsmax on the Talk Information Center on this Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. I'm your volunteer reader, Dennis McDonald, and here are your headlines. Russia reportedly resupplying Iran as U.S.-Russia tensions persist. Russia is reportedly shipping drone components, ammunition, and explosives to Iran to help Tehran replenish military stockpiles damaged by U.S. and Israeli strikes, according to NBC News. NBC News reported Tuesday that the shipments are traveling across the Caspian Sea to Iran's Amirabad port, citing a document from a European government that the network said was verified by a Western official. More than two dozen Russian vessels have reportedly transported the materials, with many of the ships operating under U.S. or European sanctions, according to NBC. The reported shipments include drone components, small arms ammunition, and TNT, which NBC said is used in Iranian ballistic missile warheads and drones. Former CIA analyst Jim Lampson said Iran's purchases from Russia suggest the U.S. and Israeli strikes have damaged Tehran's ability to manufacture some of those materials domestically. Iran's procurement of drone components and small arms ammunition from Russia's strongly suggests that Israeli and U.S. military strikes on Iran's facilities that produce these items have degraded Iran's domestic capability to produce them, Lampson told NBC. He said Iran would likely have to rely on foreign suppliers in the short term while rebuilding damaged production facilities. A Russian official rejected the allegations when contacted by NBC, saying, "We don't dignify fake news with an answer." The reported shipments would represent another development in an increasingly close military relationship between Moscow and Tehran. Iran has supplied Russia with Shahed drones used exclusively in its war against Ukraine, while Russia has developed the upgraded version of the Iranian-designed weapons. The Wall Street Journal reported in March that Russia had expanded military and intelligence cooperation with Iran, including providing satellite imagery and improved drone technology that could help Tehran target U.S. forces in the region. European officials also raised concerns about Russian assistance to Iran directly with Secretary of State Marco Rubio at a G7 meeting in March. Reuters reported that European foreign ministers pressed Rubio over alleged allegations that Moscow was aiding Tehran, including through satellite imagery and drone technology. Rubio appeared to downplay Russia's involvement at the time. "I think Russia is primarily concentrating on the war they have going on right now," Rubio said, according to Reuters. "Beyond that, I don't have anything to add right now." The reported military resupply also comes as Russia's relationship with Washington remains deeply strained for reasons that extended well beyond the Iran conflict. Russia has been at war with Ukraine since its full-scale invasion in February 2022. And the Trump administration's efforts to broker a settlement have repeatedly run into major differences between Moscow and Kiev. Rubio met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Manila in July, but Rubio said afterward that new ideas would be needed to move the peace process forward. Reuters reported that Lavrov reaffirmed Russia's readiness for a political and diplomatic settlement. On August 14th, Lavrov accused Washington of being deeply involved in Ukrainian attacks against Russia through the provisions of intelligence and said Moscow was seeking answers from the U.S. State Department. Russia and Iran have increasingly aligned against U.S. pressure and Western sanctions, although Moscow has stopped short of entering the Iran conflict directly. The precise quantity and military significance of the reported shipments remain unclear, and Russia has denied the allegations. Next we have, Trump pauses Canada tariffs, says deal at hand. President Donald Trump said Tuesday he is pausing for 3 days the 50% tariffs on Canadian imports scheduled to take effect Wednesday after the two countries reached a tentative deal. Trump announced the three-day pause in a Truth Social post saying he had paused the 50% tariffs against Canada because Canada and the U.S., subject to the finalization of documents, have a deal. Trump also suggested the agreement could revive the Keystone XL pipeline, which was canceled by President Joe Biden shortly after he took office. The great Keystone XL pipeline, long ago killed by sleepy Joe Biden, may be awoken from the grave, Trump wrote. The tariffs were set to take effect at midnight Wednesday and target roughly $20 billion worth of Canadian goods, according to Reuters. The last-minute announcement came after weeks of negotiations between Washington and Ottawa over trade, including disputes involving Canadian tariffs on U.S. autos, alcohol, and dairy products. Reuters reported Tuesday that Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney had spoken again as the deadline approached, with significant disagreements still unresolved. Trump did not provide details of the deal or say exactly what Canada had agreed to regarding Keystone XL. Saudi Arabia resumes oil shipments through Strait of Hormuz. Saudi Aramco resumed oil loading from inside the Strait of Hormuz last week and has more tankers waiting to load as the state energy giant offers spot heavy crude cargoes, according to shipping data and trade sources. On Monday, the world's top oil exporter offered some Asian refiners Arab medium and Arab heavy crude cargoes for loading via ship-to-ship transfer off Fujairah in the United Arab Emirates this month. It had halted sales for weeks following attacks on its tanker fleet in the Strait of Hormuz during an escalation of the U.S.-Iranian conflict last month. The resumption of Saudi exports could help ease the tight supply of heavier grades that produce more residual fuel, which can be used to refuel ships and can be processed further at refineries to yield higher quality fuels such as gasoline and diesel. Three very large crude carriers, VLCCSs, Malaysia Prosperity, Algeria Prosperity, and Singapore Prosperity, loaded 2 million barrels of crude each from the Jumeirah and Ras Tanur terminals from August 12th to August 16th. Data from ship trackers Vortexa and Kepler showed a gap of 3 weeks since the last loading in the ports. It was not immediately clear which grades the tankers were carrying. Saudi Aramco has declined to comment. Sinokor, which owns the tankers, did not respond to requests for comment. Six more VLCCs could load Saudi oil from inside the strait later this month, provisional data from Kepler showed. Traders said Saudi Aramco could deploy Saudi tankers for the Hormuz transit in addition to Sinokor vessels. Seven VLCCs owned by Saudi-based operator operator Bahari were floating off the UAE in Oman, while two more were heading to Fujairah. Shipping data on LSEG showed on Tuesday. City Care exports. However, Saudi oil exports remain curtailed as the producer faces a blockade by the Yemen Houthis in the Red Sea, where Aramco diverted exports to the port of Yanbu earlier during the Iran war. The producer has offered additional crude cargoes for loading from Egypt's Mediterranean port of Sidi Ker as an alternative, but the volume is a fraction of the pre-blockade level of 4 million barrels per day exported from Yanbu, while additional shipping costs and longer voyages are deterring purchases. About 670,000 barrels per day of Middle Eastern crude are expected to be loaded at the Sidi Ker port for Asia this month. Kepler data showed from zero in the previous 3 months. This shows that the Sidi Ker offering to Asia is likely not working, as the Asian customers, at least the Chinese, are not happy with the long voyages and high freight costs, said Emer Lee, Vortex's China market analyst. Next we have Vicente Assassination Plotter Gets 6 Years by Jim Thomas. A federal judge in Washington on Tuesday sentenced a 25-year-old Massachusetts resident to 6 years and 1 month in federal prison on weapons charges stemming from a January 2025 plot to kill Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent with a knife and Molotov cocktails on the day of his Senate confirmation. According to the Department of Justice, U.S. District Court Judge Rudolph Contreras imposed the sentence on Ryan Michael English of South Deerfield, Massachusetts, who pleaded guilty in March to unlawful receipt, possession, or transfer of a firearm in carrying a dangerous weapon or incendiary device on the U.S. Capitol grounds. Contreras also ordered 3 years of supervised release and credited English with roughly 20 months of time served. Prosecutors had asked for 121 months, the top of the 97 to 121-month sentencing range. Contreras called the range too high, saying no one was hurt, the homemade firebombs appeared incapable of igniting, and English surrendered at the south door of the Capitol shortly after 3 p.m. on January 27, 2025, the afternoon the Senate confirmed Bessent. Bessent was not at the Capitol when English arrived. According to court filings and the Department of Justice, English drove from Massachusetts intending to kill a cabinet official or burn down the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank in Washington. English's original targets included House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. English then shifted focus to Bessent after seeing him on television discussing the federal minimum wage. Investigators recovered a folding knife, a lighter, and two 50-milliliter Absolut vodka bottles filled with the cloth wicks. English told police the plot was inspired by Luigi Mangione, who was charged with murder in the December 24th killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. English, who is transgender and goes by Riley Jane English, told the court she had been experiencing a mental health crisis and abusing drugs, saying, "I never wanted to hurt anyone." Defense counsel asked that English be placed in a woman's prison, but Contreras left that to the Federal Bureau of Prisons. The defendant is now a convicted felon and is headed where he belongs, prison, said U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro, whose office prosecuted the case. Next, we have White House defends Trump's ability to vote by mail. The White House on Tuesday defended President Donald Trump's ability to vote by mail after reports the president cast his ballot by mail in Florida's Republican primary despite previously labeling mail-in ballots as cheating. As President Trump has said, the Save America Act has common sense exemptions for Americans to use mail-in ballots for illness, disability, military, or travel. But universal mail-in voting should not be allowed because it's highly susceptible to fraud. White House spokeswoman Olivia Wales said when asked about reports Trump voted by mail in the primary. As everyone knows, the president is a resident of Palm Beach and participates in Florida elections. But he obviously primarily lives at the White House in Washington, D.C., Wales added. Politico reported on Monday that Trump voted by mail in Florida's Republican primary, citing local voting records. Palm Beach County election officials said the information regarding a voter's vote by mail is confidential. Trump is pushing Congress to enact new voting restrictions and is trying to restrict mail-in voting, repeating allegations that it is more susceptible to fraud. Trump cast his vote by mail in a March special election in Florida. Next, we have Donalds wins Florida GOP governor primary, will face Jolly. Representative Byron Donalds, Republican of Florida, won Florida's Republican gubernatorial primary Tuesday, setting up a November showdown with former Republican Representative David Jolly, who won the Democrat nomination. Newsmax and Decision Desk HQ called the race for Donalds, with 87% of the vote counted. Donalds had 48.8%, followed by Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, 24.8%, former Florida House Speaker Paul Renner at 10.1%, and eight other candidates for the GOP nomination to succeed term-limited Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. President Donald Trump endorsed Donalds early in the race, giving the congressman a powerful advantage in a state Trump has made his home. DeSantis declined to endorse Donalds and backed Collins, his lieutenant governor, helping turn the primary into a test of Trump's influence over Florida Republicans. Donalds, who has represented Southwest Florida in Congress since 2021, will become Florida's first black governor if he defeats Jolly in November. Newsmax and Decision Desk HQ called the race for Jolly, who represented a Tampa Bay area district in Congress as a Republican from 2014 to 2017, later left the GOP and joined the Democratic Party. With 92% of the vote counted, Jolly had 61.6%, followed by Dana Foster at 14.8% and four other candidates. Jolly has selected former Representative Gwen Graham, Democrat of Florida, the daughter of former Florida Governor and Senator Bob Graham, as his running mate. Republicans enter the general election with a substantial recent advantage in Florida. Trump carried the state in 2024, continuing a political shift that has transformed what was once one of the nation's premier presidential battlegrounds into increasingly Republican territory. Next, we have former Fauci advisor admits violating federal records laws by Sam Barron. Dr. David Morins, a former senior advisor to Dr. Anthony Fauci, pleaded guilty in federal court Tuesday to a conspiracy charge stemming from a scheme to evade Freedom of Information Act requests and the Federal Records Act, in connection with communications about COVID-19 research grants. Morins used his private email account to intentionally circumvent public records laws while employed at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He concealed or destroyed records of discussions related to COVID-19 research grants, including an effort to revive a controversial coronavirus grant, the Justice Department said. According to Morin's guilty plea, he and two unidentified co-conspirators agreed in writing to hide their communications from public view by using his personal Gmail account rather than his official National Institutes of Health email account, including to exchange non-public NIH information. The plea also says one of them gave Morin's wine for his behind-the-scenes shenanigans and arranged for its delivery to his Maryland residence. Morin's then allegedly identified an official act that he could perform to deserve the gift, which was to author a scientific commentary in a prominent medical journal advocating that COVID-19 had natural origins, the Justice Department said. According to Morin's guilty plea, the co-conspirator suggested he would provide Morin's with additional things of value, including meals at Michelin-starred restaurants in Paris, New York, and Washington, D.C. At a recent Senate hearing, Fauci invoked his Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination in declining to answer questions about his relationship with Morin's. At a House committee hearing in 2024, Fauci said Morin's actions were wrong and that he did not participate in them. Morin's faces a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison when he sentenced in November. Dr. Morin's has taken responsibility for what he did and will continue to do so, as defense attorney Timothy Belevance said in a statement. Next, we have Bill Would End Taking Social Security for Student Loan Debt by Sam Barron. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, is set to introduce a bill that would prevent seniors from having their Social Security payments withheld by the government to pay back student loan debt. As a result of President Donald Trump's disastrous cuts to education, an increasing number of seniors are in danger of having their Social Security checks garnished to pay back student loans they took out decades ago. That is beyond unacceptable, Sanders said in a statement. In the richest country in the history of the world, no senior should have their Social Security payments taken away from them to pay back student debt. Sanders will introduce the bill when the Senate returns from recess next month. Over 9 million Americans are now in default on their student loans, Sanders said in introducing the Stop Social Security Garnishment Act. More than one-third of Social Security recipients with student loan debt depend on their benefits to cover basic expenses. Among those whose benefits are garnished for defaulted student loans, half said financial pressures forced them to forego a doctor's visit or a needed prescription, according to Sanders. The Stop Social Security Garnishment Act of 2026 would prohibit the federal government from withholding Social Security benefits, including Social Security disability insurance payments, to collect defaulted student loan debt. The measure is intended to protect older Americans and people with disabilities from losing benefits they rely on to pay for health care, prescription drugs, groceries, or other necessities. The bill is co-sponsored by Democrat Senators Edward Markey and Elizabeth Warren, both of Massachusetts. (Clears throat) Next we have U.S. housing market remains under pressure. Factory output rises. U.S. single-family home building fell sharply in July to the lowest in more than 3.5 years. And contract signings for purchases of existing homes also slid in the latest signal that the housing market remains under pressure from higher mortgage rates and economic uncertainty from the Iran war. The manufacturing sector, meanwhile, continues to ride the coattails of artificial intelligence build-out, with a Federal Reserve measure of factory output hitting its highest in more than 4 years last month, led by production gains for high-tech equipment and industrial and construction supplies. Single-family housing starts, which account for the bulk of the home building, dropped 9.9% last month to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 808,000 units, the Commerce Department Census Bureau said Tuesday. That was the lowest since November 2022. Single-family home building slid 15.7% year-on-year in July. Permits for future construction of single-family homes, an indicator of future construction activity, rose 2.5% last month to a rate of 894,000 units. They were up 1.1% year-on-year in July for only the second yearly increase in the past 2 years, though the insurance rate remains near the slowest in 3 years. Though the issuance rate remains near the slowest in 3 years. Until mortgage rates decline and allow builders to unload currently completed homes or those under construction, we expect home builders to remain hesitant to make significant investments in new projects, Nationwide senior economist Ben Ayers said. Total new home starts, including multifamily structures such as apartments, fell 12.4% to 1.239 million in July. Economists polled by Reuters had estimated an annualized rate of 1.35 million. Overall, new issuance of residential construction permits rose 5% to a rate of 1.443 million units. Economists had estimated a permit run of 1.37 million. Contract signings for existing homes, which become completed sales transactions typically a month or two later, also fell in July, the National Association of Realtors reported Tuesday. They were down 2.3% on the month, and the lowest level since January. The residential real estate market remains in a deep rut, with high mortgage rates and limited supply of homes on the market hurting affordability and sales rates. The highest mortgage rates of the year hit right in the middle of summer, and that's pulling back contract signings, NAR chief economist Lawrence Yun said in a statement. Home prices are at record highs, so houses for sale are sitting on the market longer, and fewer buyers are bidding above the asking price than a year ago, though there are large local market variations, Young added. The contract rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, the most popular U.S. home loan, ticked lower in the week ended August 7th, for the first time since mid-June, the Mortgage Bankers Association reported last week. Still at 6.77%, it remains near the highest in more than a year. On Monday, the National Association of Home Builders reported an unexpected uptick in sentiment among construction firms, but their confidence overall remains significantly subdued in the face of economic uncertainty, high mortgage rates, and steep building costs aggravated by the U.S.-led war in Iran. AI boom helps factories. The weak housing market stands in contrast to a robust factory sector. Boyd yet again by hefty AI investment activity that is driving demand for high-tech equipment and supplies needed to build and run massive data centers. The Fed reported its manufacturing output index rose 0.2% in July on the heels of an upwardly revised 0.3% increase in June. The index was at its highest since April of 2022. The usual suspects, including AI-linked industries, drove industrial production, and particularly durable goods, manufacturing higher. Bernard Yaros, lead U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, said in a note, "Business equipment production rose 0.8%, led by a 1.5% gain in information processing equipment and a 1.4% gain in industrial supplies, which offset a decline in transit equipment output. Semiconductor output rose 2.4%, and computer and peripheral tech gear production rose 1.8%. Oxford's Yaros expects the momentum to broaden out the lift and lift other sectors beyond high tech. AI is increasingly spilling over into other investment goods beyond information processing equipment," he said. Defense production also rose 1.8% amid continued high spending from the U.S.-led war in Iran. Motor vehicle assemblies slipped to 10.42 million on a seasonally adjusted annualized rate of 10.68 million in June. Heavy and medium truck production, an indicator of demand from trucking and delivery companies, fell to the lowest since March. Next, we have Disney ABC sue FCC over threats to broadcast licenses. Disney and its ABC unit sued the Federal Communications Commission Tuesday to block an early review of licenses for 8 ABC stations, arguing that the Trump administration is trying to punish the network over its broadcast content. President Donald Trump has repeatedly urged broadcasters to drop comedy or news programs he dislikes, or which have been critical, pressing the FCC on numerous occasions to revoke ABC's licenses. In a lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in Washington, Disney said FCC was seeking to coerce and retaliate against a network that refuses to bow to the administration's demands, calling the agency's actions an extraordinary assault on free speech. The latest move follows a 2-year-long battle between Trump and Disney. Last month, Trump again called for ABC stations to lose their licenses because the network refused to air a primetime speech on elections. The court case will pose a key test in the free speech rights of media outlets. Disney and ABC asked the court to quickly issue a temporary restraining order halting the license renewal proceedings and preventing the FCC from scheduling a hearing. The company said the public comment period ended earlier this month and the FCC should act at any time. The lawsuit alleges that the administration is violating the company's First Amendment free speech rights, saying that the FCC is using its regulatory power to retaliate against Disney and ABC for programming and editorial decisions the administration dislikes. The FCC said the move stemmed from a year-long investigation into whether Disney's diversity policies amounted to unlawful discrimination, an allegation the company denies. The White House did not immediately comment. FCC Chair Brendan Carr, who did not immediately comment on Tuesday, ordered the reviews in April, even though the station's license renewals were not scheduled to be considered before October 2028. The FCC had not ordered an early review in more than 50 years before April. Carr has reportedly said he wants to enforce the FCC's public interest obligation for broadcasters and use the public airways, which he says the FCC has failed to properly deploy for decades. The FCC says on its website that the public interest standard means it must air programming that is responsive to the needs and problems of its local community of license. Democrat FCC Commissioner Ana Gomez said on Tuesday that for months the FCC has waged a campaign of censorship and control against Disney's ABC stations, using the threat of broadcast license revocations to punish a company for speech and administration it doesn't like. The reviews were ordered the day after Trump urged ABC to fire late-night host Jimmy Kimmel. Broadcast stations need FCC licenses to use public airwaves. While license revocations are extremely rare, critics say the threat of losing a license can pressure broadcasters and raise concerns about government interference in editorial and programming decisions. Networks have broad First Amendment protections over programming choices. Trump called in November for the FCC to revoke ABC's licenses after it criticized an ABC News correspondent for asking Saudi Arabia's crown prince about a 2018 killing of a Washington Post columnist in a question the president described as insubordinate. The FCC is also investigating ABC daytime talk show The View, which discusses U.S. politics after saying it may be subject to federal rules requiring broadcasters to provide equal opportunities to political candidates. Disney noted that since February, the program has not invited any political candidates to appear, citing the FCC's pressure campaign. Next, we have Amazon set to expand drone delivery to 500 cities. Millions of people may be able to get smaller, lightweight Amazon packages delivered by drones by the end of the year, under a plan the company announced Thursday to expand the airborne shipping to suburban areas in nearly 500 cities. Customers could receive the drone deliveries as fast as 30 minutes, Amazon said in a news release. The drones can carry packages up to 5 pounds. The plan will intensify the battle between Amazon and Walmart to provide customers with the fastest delivery times. Both giants rely on a mix of drones and drivers to deliver everything consumers have ordered. Amazon's plan would expand its drone delivery operation more than sixfold nationwide to hundreds of new communities, including the Chicago, Atlanta, Cleveland, and Boise metro areas. The drones will primarily fly in the suburbs as well, away from skyscrapers and major airports that could cause problems. Hundreds of thousands of packages have already been delivered by Amazon drones this year. But even after this expansion, drones will still only handle a fraction of the hundreds of millions of packages delivered each year. In addition to only being able to carry 5 pounds, the drones Amazon builds face countless challenges, from tree cover to landscaping to inflatable pools that can make it hard to find a good drone drop zone. There are also regulatory hurdles to overcome in every community where Amazon wants to set up operations. Noise concerns also pose a potential challenge. It's still an experiment. It's still in test and learn mode, said Sakarati Kodali, who is a retail analyst with Forrester. Initially, consumers might order something delivered by drone because they are curious about it, but it's not clear how often they will continue to use the service, and Amazon is still working out the economics, Kodaly said. The service will be free for Amazon Prime members who are ordering more than $50 worth of goods, but smaller orders will cost members $2.99. Non-members will pay $4.99 for drone delivery. Prime members get free deliveries, while non-members pay a flat fee if the shipment is under $35 for standard delivery or up to $12.99 for same-day shipments when available. Kodaly said drones could prove more useful for certain lightweight deliveries that are needed urgently, like prescription medications. DoorDash and other delivery companies are also experimenting with using drones to deliver foods and other goods. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy told shareholders in his annual letter in April that the company has learned a great deal by flying drones in 11 sites across Arizona, Florida, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, Nebraska, and Texas. In each location, the drones launched from an Amazon warehouse and cover about 170 square miles. So it takes multiple drone launching locations to serve a large metro area. Prime Air now has a design that'll scale plans to serve communities within 30 million customers by year end, and expects to deliver a 500 million packages by the end of this decade, with an aim to deliver inside 30 minutes, Jassy wrote. Amazon is also continuing to invest in its warehouses, smaller fulfillment centers closer to customers, and its fleet of trucks as the company competes to deliver packages within minutes or hours instead of just days. Amazon is already certified by the Federal Aviation Administration, and the company has been awarded waivers to fly drones beyond the line of sight of the pilots. Amazon has invested in safety measures to help drones avoid collisions with everything else in the sky while they are making deliveries. The federal government has proposed a rule that would allow more drone operators to fly beyond the horizon, but that hasn't been finalized yet. Next, we have Home Depot sales lifted by smaller projects. Home Depot sales improved during its fiscal second quarter as customers focused on smaller projects during the summer months, with the U.S. housing sector still mired in a slump. Revenue increased to $47.86 billion from $45.28 billion, edging out the $47.24 billion that Wall Street had expected, according to a survey by Factsheet. Globally, sales at stores open at least a year, a key indicator of retailers' health, climbed 1.7% in the U.S. Comparable store sales rose 1.3%. Our second quarter results exceeded our expectations, Chief Financial Officer Richard McPhail said Tuesday. We saw broad-based demand across the business as customers continue to engage in smaller projects. Customer transactions slipped 1% in the quarter, but the amount of shoppers spent rose to $92.50 per average receipt from $90.01 a year earlier. Home Depot also announced on Tuesday that it is launching express delivery nationwide. The service will get orders to customers within 3 hours or less. It will be available for a small flat fee in the U.S., with no subscription or membership required. For the 3 months ended August 2nd, Home Depot earned $4.77 billion, or $4.79 per share. A year earlier, the home improvement retailer earned $4.55 billion, or $4.58 per share. Excluding one-time items, earnings were $4.92 per share. That's much better than the $4.73 per share the Wall Street predicted. The Atlanta company has posted solid back-to-back quarterly performances this year, though many Americans have struggled to buy a home. Despite the solid performance, Home Depot stuck with its earlier sales growth guidance for fiscal 2026 of between 2.5% and 4.5%. It also left unchanged its expectations that comparable sales will be flat, up to 2%. Home Depot said its outlook includes tariff refunds, which are expected to partially offset higher fuel, energy, and other product input costs throughout the year. Last year, the company said it didn't expect to raise prices because of tariffs, but executive Billy Bastek said at the time that some products that were on Home Depot shelves may disappear. The U.S. housing market has been in a slump dating back to 2022. The year mortgage rates began climbing from historic lows that fueled a home buying frenzy at the start of this decade. While the average long-term U.S. mortgage rate fell slightly for the first time in 6 weeks last week, it is still up from last year, and borrowing costs remain steeper than they were a year ago. Sales of previously occupied U.S. homes slowed again in July as record prices and the highest mortgage rates in the year proved to be an insurmountable hurdle for many prospective buyers. Existing home sales fell 1.7% last month from June to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 4.0 million units, the National Association of Realtors said last week. Home prices continue to rise, hitting unprecedented levels for the month of July, NAR said. The U.S. median sales price increased 2% from a year earlier to $434,100. The company's stock rose more than 2% before the market opened. Next, we have inflation again outpaces wage growth in the U.S. by Theodore Bunker. Wages are again failing to keep pace with inflation, increasing pressure on household budgets. The Consumer Price Index rose 3.4% in the 12 months through July, while average hourly earnings for private sector workers increased 3.2%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Real average hourly earnings, which account for inflation, fell 0.2% from July 2025 and declined 0.1% from June. The renewed decline comes as a new University of Chicago and ADP research working paper documents the lingering damage from the earlier inflation surge. Researchers Eric Hurst, Christina Patterson, Neela Richardson, and Yi Liv Wang analyzed payroll data covering roughly one-seventh of the U.S. workers from 2016 through 2025. The long shadow of the pandemic's high inflation is still hanging over workers, Hurst, a labor economist at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business, told CBS News. Workers were already behind the eight ball in terms of affordability, even going into inflationary pressures that started earlier this year from the war in Iran, Hurst said. Median real wages fell about 4% during the inflation surge, the paper found, among workers employed continuously at the same company from December 2020 through December 2024. 43% finished with lower inflation-adjusted pay, including people who changed employers, reduced the share with real wage losses of 37%. The picture improved modestly in 2025. The proportion of workers with negative cumulative real wage growth over 5 years fell to 33.9%, but average cumulative growth remained about 4 percentage points below the pandemic trends, according to researchers. The study found that companies typically rely on established annual raise patterns that adjust slowly to unpredicted inflation. Before the pandemic, the most common company raise was about 3%, and most workers received increases between 2 and 4%. That's what I got at University of Chicago, which works well when inflation is at 2%, because it gives us a 1% real wage growth, Hearst said. But when inflation exceeds 3%, then real wages start to erode. Changing employers helped offset the losses, with job switchers' pay rising nearly 1-for-1 with inflation. But workers change jobs too infrequently for the advantage to erase the broader losses, the study said. People who switch jobs tend to keep up with inflation, which is great, but switching jobs is not free, Hearst said. You have to expend effort to look for a job, move your family, or change your workflow. Some actions workers take to keep up with inflation are themselves inherently costly. Researchers describe the loss as an inflation transfer from workers to companies benefiting from lower inflation-adjusted labor costs. They found corporate profits as a share of gross domestic product rose 1.7 percentage points from pandemic levels and remained elevated through 2025. Real wages are low and firm profits are high, and they do not unrelate to each other, Hearst said. The labor market is also cooling. U.S. payrolls fell by 23,000 jobs in July, while the unemployment rate held at 4.1%. Next, we have some health news. New study links gut health to Alzheimer's disease by Lynn C. Allison. Could a substance made by bacteria in your gut help drive changes linked to Alzheimer's disease? New research has identified a bacterial byproduct that may help explain the growing connection between gut and brain health. The molecule called imidazole propionate, or IMP, was associated with cognitive decline in biological markers of Alzheimer's disease in humans and promoted Alzheimer's-related changes in laboratory models, according to research published in Nature Communications. The findings suggest IMP may affect the blood-brain barrier, the protective layer that helps keep potentially harmful substances in the bloodstream from entering the brain. IMP is produced by certain gut bacteria as the metabolized histine, an essential amino acid found in many protein-rich foods. Researchers are investigating whether elevated levels of the bacterial byproduct in the blood could make the brain more vulnerable to Alzheimer's-related damage. Researchers analyzed blood samples and cognitive data from nearly 1,200 cognitively impaired adults with an average age of about 61, including participants in the Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention and the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. People with higher blood levels of IMP were more likely to have Alzheimer's-related biomarkers and experience faster cognitive decline over time. Higher IMP is also associated with elevated levels of PTAU-217, a biomarker strongly associated with Alzheimer's disease, and neurofilament light change, or NFL, a marker of nerve cell injury. Federico Rey, a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and co-author of the study, said that IMP-producing bacteria are present in a large faction of people, but they're not very abundant in most people. But something we have learned over the years is that a microbe doesn't have to be abundant to have an impact on the host. IMP has previously been linked to conditions including type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. In the new study, experiments in genetically modified mice suggest that IMP can disrupt the blood-brain barrier and promote the accumulation of beta amyloid and tau, two abnormal proteins associated with Alzheimer's disease. That process eventually results in the death of neutrons, and in humans is a key feature of Alzheimer's disease, Rai says. Researchers also identified a genetic variation in about 43% of the study participants that was associated with higher levels of IMP in the blood. Ray said the genetic difference has previously been linked to increased Alzheimer's risk, and the new findings may offer clues about how the genetic variation influences the brain. The research points to a possible biological pathway connecting gut bacteria, metabolism, and neurodegeneration, and potentially new ways of reducing Alzheimer's risk or lowering cognitive decline. But the findings do not mean people should avoid foods containing histidine. The amino acid is essential to human health and is naturally found in nutritious protein-rich foods. Nor does the study prove that lowering IMP will prevent or treat Alzheimer's disease. Instead, researchers say IMP itself could eventually become a target for drugs or other therapies designed to reduce its production or effects. Such an approach would aim to alter a potentially harmful metabolic pathway without eliminating health foods from the diet. Healthy foods from the diet. More research, including clinical studies, will be needed to determine whether targeting IMP can actually prevent or slow cognitive decline in people. For now, the discovery adds another intriguing piece to the growing evidence that what happens in the gut may have important consequences for the brain. Well, that concludes today's reading of Newsmax on the Talking Information Center on this Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. I hope you enjoyed today's reading, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.